God bless you. Well, it is great to see every one of you in this house today on this Palm Sunday. And just for a few moments this morning, I want us to talk about the perseverance of Jesus. The perseverance. Can everybody just say that word, perseverance? Let's say it together. Perseverance. It's the perseverance of Jesus. And how that perseverance, how that daily decision in his life, it literally changed everything. It changed everything. I would like for us just to talk about the decisions. The decisions. Last week we talked about choices, but I'd like for us to talk about the decisions that came from his perseverance and his determination. This same perseverance, these decisions that he made that literally changed history. Literally changed our relationship. It changed the way that we relate to God. These decisions that Jesus made. Literally on a daily basis. The decision that he made that ultimately validated humanity. It brought hope. It brought purpose. And it put us in right standing with our Creator. I want to begin with what we would call maybe the Sunday of the Passion Week. The Sunday of Jesus' last earthly week. The Sunday, this first day of this week of Passion, this holy week. And Jesus, on that day, he made a decision to go to Jerusalem for Passover. Some of the disciples tried to convince him not to go because they knew that his haters were there and they were waiting for him there and that they were determined ultimately to get rid of him. But Jesus, he made this decision. He made a conscious decision. He knew the opposition that he was going to experience when he got there. He knew also that it was all part of God's much bigger plan for his life. And so he made a decision and he set his course toward Jerusalem. The word got out that he was coming. And so when he arrived at the city gate, there were crowds of followers that were there waiting on him. And they were there lining the streets and welcoming him. And they were waving palm branches in the same way they would do when a king arrives, if you will. Many were taking off their cloaks and laying them on the street. And they sang Hosanna and they rejoiced and they celebrated. The king has come. Palm Sunday. But this only served to make those religious leaders even that much angrier, to make them hate him all the more. And so they began to move quickly and aggressively. And behind closed doors, they began to set him up, ultimately to be arrested, to put on this fake trial with a fixed verdict, and ultimately to give him a death sentence. That was on Sunday. That was Palm Sunday. And on Thursday, we often refer to it as Maundy Thursday. Just 4 days later, he's in the Garden of Gethsemane, and he's praying. And again, Jesus is dealing with the same decision. This decision as it relates to his destiny, as it relates to his future, as it relates to his purpose here on earth. And in Matthew chapter 26, verse 38, we begin to see this exchange that's taking place in the garden. It says, then he said to them, my soul is exceedingly sorrowful, even to death. He's saying to his disciples, stay here and watch with me. He went a little further and he fell on his face and he prayed, saying, oh, my Father, if it is possible, let this cup pass from me. Nevertheless, I love that. I love every time that word shows up in the Bible, whether it's Jesus saying it or someone else saying, I love when that word nevertheless shows up because it means there's fixing to be a shift. There's fixing to be a turn. There's fixing to be a change that's going to take place here. He says, if it's possible, let this cup pass from me. Nevertheless, not as I will, but as you will. This whole scene, these words and this decision that Jesus is making in this awful moment in that garden, where he's literally sweating blood, literally this decision, it is evidence. It's evidence of a decision that he had been making already for 33 years. He had already been making the decision to walk the path that God had for his life. It was a decision. It was a daily decision. Now listen, I don't want today just to paint an ugly picture for you. This path of Jesus, this 33 years of a natural earthly life that he walked, it wasn't always difficult. It wasn't always bad. It was filled with some incredible moments. It was filled with some supernatural moments. Jesus was raised in a Jewish family, in a Jewish culture, and there was always many festivities and parties and celebrations. There was a lot of happy moments in Jesus' life. That environment, oftentimes and many times, it brought moments of great joy, of great excitement, of laughter, of fulfillment in his life. As we all know and have seen through his earthly ministry in the last 3 to 3.5 years of his life, lepers were healed, blind eyes were opened, dead folks were walking out of graves alive. These were some good times. There were good moments. There were exciting, euphoric moments in the life of Jesus. So Jesus had some days that were awesome. Jesus had some days that were celebratory, just like you and I experience. He had some great moments, but then there were moments and there were seasons like we just read. There were those kind of moments as well, and those moments would test his resolve, and they would test his determination to ultimately walk the path that God had for him. We hear his heart in the garden. He said, if it's possible, can we just avoid this whole process? So we see that there is this testing of his resolve in that moment. Can I just say today that the greatest demonstration of faith that Jesus ever showed in his ministry, it was not the feeding of the 5,000. It was not the dead, when he spoke to the dead and they were raised. That was not the greatest demonstration of Jesus' faith. It was not when he spoke to the lame man and he walked. It wasn't turning water into wine. The greatest demonstration of God's faith, of Jesus' faith, was his repeated daily decision to keep walking toward the cross. Every day, waking up as a child, his entire life, waking up every day knowing what his purpose was, knowing what his destiny was. Can y'all see what I see? There's like something just floating right here. I don't know. There's still a bird in here. Oh, my goodness. We prayed before the service that no one would get distracted by the bird. Where is the bird right now? Is he? They tried to kill the thing, but... I hope that didn't make anybody. But you know, it can be a distraction. So, but Jesus' greatest faith, it was demonstrated by that daily decision to keep walking toward the cross. You and I sit here in church today, and we sit here forgiven of our sin. And the reason we do is because Jesus kept walking toward the cross. You and I can be in right standing with God, even though we don't deserve it, because Jesus, one step at a time, one day at a time, kept making the decision to keep walking toward the cross. So many times I think we've been guilty in church, we've been guilty as Christians, as just encapsulating all that Jesus did for us, all wrapped up and encapsulated into that one weekend. You know, the torture and the persecution and the beating and the crucifixion and the death. And we encapsulate it all into that one moment. But what I want us to think about today is what Jesus did every single day of his life, knowing what his purpose was. I also want to say to all of us today that we should never underestimate all those small decisions that move us in the right direction. We talked a lot about this last week, about choices and the power of choices and the choices we make, but we need to never underestimate the decisions that we made that have brought us to the place that we're at today, the decisions that we're making today that will catapult us and take us into the purpose and the plan and the destiny that God has for our lives. Every time we pray a simple prayer of faith, that prayer matters. When we make the decision to take our family to church, as many of you have today, and you said, you know what, this is going to be a non-negotiable thing in our lives. We're pouring concrete on this. That decision matters. It matters for you. It matters for your marriage. It matters for your children. It matters ultimately for generations to come. When we're intentional, when we're intentional about the things that we do, when we're intentional about the relationships in our life, the people that we do life with and hang out with, we make the decision, and that decision matters. Look, we need to be, we must be kind and friendly and courteous and loving to everyone in our airspace, but we cannot walk a path that God has planned for us to walk with people who have chosen to not walk that path. Plain and simple. Every time we make the decision that says, I can't go where they're going, I must go where God is calling me to go, we're making a decision that impacts our life, our family, our future, and our destiny. In ancient Jewish culture, formal education began at age 6. And Jesus, at that age, he would have gone to the synagogue school. He would have been educated there, and he would have graduated 4 years later. 4 years. And when he graduated from that school, he would have already memorized the entire Torah. For those of you who don't know, that would be the first 5 books of our now Old Testament. 10 years old. 10 years old, and he knows it front to back. He's got it word for word. And he not only would have memorized the Torah, but he also would have been very familiar with the rest of what we now call the Old Testament prophecies. He would have been very familiar with the prophecies that we read now in the Old Testament. And in Luke's gospel, we see where Jesus stands up to read in the temple. He grabs one of the scrolls, and that day he's called on. He's the reader that day, and he chooses the writings of what we now refer to and know as Isaiah 61. And he knows that this writing that he's about to read before this congregation in the synagogue, he knows that it's describing him, and it's describing why he's here. It's describing his purpose. And so Jesus gets up, and he takes the scroll, and he rolls it out, and he chooses this particular passage. And we can find it in Isaiah 61, this prophecy. And here's what it reads in Luke 4. This is Jesus speaking to the crowd that day in the synagogue. He says, "The Spirit of the Lord is upon me, because he has anointed me to preach the gospel to the poor. And he has sent me to heal the brokenhearted, to proclaim liberty to the captives, and recovery of sight to the blind, to set at liberty those who are oppressed, to proclaim the acceptable year of the Lord." And then he rolls up the scroll, and he gave it back to the attendant, and he sat down. And all the eyes in the room are fixed on him. They pick up on this vibe that's going on. And then he stood back up, and he declared, Today, this scripture is fulfilled in your hearing. The fact that Jesus read Isaiah and knew that this message, this story, this description was all about him, the fact that he knew that would also mean that he had been very familiar with all the other descriptive prophecies about him. That if he was familiar with that particular reading and that particular passage in the scriptures, then he was also familiar with those very descriptive prophecies that spoke not of these miraculous things that were going to be happening, but also, not also those descriptive prophecies that spoke of his pain that he would endure. Those prophecies that would speak of the price that he would have to pay and the sacrifice that he would have to make and the pressure that he would experience. He also knew that there were some of those same scrolls in there that would describe those things, and he knew those all too well also. So imagine this with me. Allow me to use a little bit of liberty and a little bit of license with the scripture and read in a little bit more today. Imagine with me this young boy, this child, 11, 12 years old. Imagine this young boy, Jesus, sitting in what we would call church service, sitting in the synagogue while worship is taking place. There's men on one side and there's women on the other. And on any particular day when they're sitting in that moment in the synagogue, in any given day, on any particular day, someone else might have been the reader that day. And on that particular day, the attendant would have handed the reader another scroll. And on this particular day, it wouldn't be the Isaiah 61 that we just read a minute ago that Jesus would say and we read in Luke 4. No, it wouldn't be that one. It would be Isaiah 53, which described also his future. And here's how it reads. Isaiah 53:7. He was oppressed and afflicted, yet he did not open his mouth. He was led like a lamb to the slaughter, and as a sheep before its shearers is silent, so he did not open his mouth. By oppression and judgment he was taken away, yet who of his generation protested? For he was cut off from the land of the living. For the transgression of my people he was punished. Now imagine with me this little boy. Imagine with me this little boy, Jesus. When they began to read this prophecy from Isaiah, imagine this little vulnerable little boy now looking around the room, trying to find his mother. And somewhere along the way, he finally locks eyes with her. And they look at one another across the room because they both knew something that no one else in the room knew. They both knew that this description that this guy was reading from today was all about him. And this was the part of the path that they didn't want to think about very often. And then the reader continues. He was assigned a grave with the wicked and with the rich in his death. Though he had done no violence, nor was any deceit in his mouth, yet it was the Lord's will to crush him and cause him to suffer. Think about this little boy. A big lump in his throat. He swallows deep and hard. He wants this moment to pass. I don't want to hear this description anymore. The reader goes on. And though the Lord makes his life an offering for sin, he will see his offspring and prolong his days, and the will of the Lord will prosper in his hand. Now, considering all of this, considering a moment like this, maybe multiple days in the synagogue like this, I wonder if Jesus, as a boy, leaving the synagogue on those particular days of worship, it was a little bit of a longer walk home on those days. It was a little bit longer, maybe, of a donkey ride home on those particular days. And I wonder if on those particular nights and maybe other nights of his life, he, as a young boy, he would toss and turn in his bed. And no doubt there were moments when Mary would have had to come to him and hold him and assure him, her little boy, assure him and comfort him and maybe look into his eyes and speak life over him. And maybe she would say things like this, Jesus, son, this is our privilege. This is our privilege. This is why you're here. This is your purpose. You're the Messiah. You have been chosen by heaven. You are here to save God's people from their sins. And I'm so proud of you, son. I'm so thankful to be your mother. And as she holds him and both of them weeping, knowing what their purpose and destiny was, she would say, I'm so thankful that God chose me to give birth to you. You can't forget this, Jesus. I know it's not easy, but you're the hope of all mankind. You're the one we've prayed for, and God has sent you. You are the hope of the world. I just imagine those kind of conversations where a mother is holding her son who's wrestling with his destiny. And then I imagine Jesus, like most boys do, like most of us do, we learn really young how to be brave, don't we? We have to learn how to not be vulnerable anymore. We have to learn how to not be weak anymore. We learn real quick how to be brave. And I just imagine Jesus standing up and in his own way, just kind of walking away and walking the path, making a decision to say, I'm going to walk the path. deciding again today to walk the path. I'm just going to keep walking the path. Look, I hope they don't read those same scriptures next week that they read today, but today I'm going to walk. I hope I don't have to keep hearing that prediction all the time. I hope I can sleep a little better tonight than I did last night, but for now, I'm just going to keep walking. I've decided to keep walking the path. What many people don't understand is that Jesus was not forced to do what he did. No more than you and I are forced to walk the path that God has for you and me. Jesus even said himself, he said this, he said, at any point I could call angels down from heaven, that they would come and they would rescue me and I'm out of here. He said, I could do that. So a lot of people don't realize that Jesus willingly, daily made the decision, daily he took one step at a time, one day at a time toward the cross. Because it's what God had preordained for his life. And this morning on this Palm Sunday, there's really no other agenda today. There's really no other focus today than this one thing. I want all of us to begin to celebrate what Jesus did for us one day at a time, one step at a time, every single day of his life, walking the path that God had for his life toward the cross. And I'm going to tell you something, as a man, the manly part of me, the masculine part of me, I'm going to tell you, I think of Jesus in this way as my hero. He's my hero. It's one thing to watch a movie and you see these fictional heroes, but it's another thing for me as a man to understand that Jesus literally, day after day, he summoned the courage and he summoned the bravery and the boldness to face with all kinds of opposition what was in front of him, and to never give up, to never quit. I know that typically, a lot of times, we like to kind of paint Jesus in this little lowly, meek sort of place. This is the guy who sits on a hillside, and children are drawn to him, and he's just kind of got this magnetic personality, this sweet fella who sits down with the woman at the well and loves her, and back to health and emotional and relational and spiritual health. We love to think of him that way, and he was that. But I'm going to tell you something. As a man, I love relating to the one who said in the face of all opposition, I'm not going to quit. When faced with pressure, when faced with pain, he said, I'm not giving up. That's the hero in my life. That's who's the hero. I love sweet little Jesus loving on the children on the hillside. I love sweet little Jesus loving the woman. I love all of that. But the man that is my hero is the man who faced it every day. He knew what tomorrow held. He knew what his purpose was. And yet he got up every day and he faced it and he said, I will not quit. Oh, I love that scene and those scenes, if you will, from that awful and yet awesome movie, The Passion of the Christ. We all kind of have a love-hate relationship with that movie. We don't want to watch it because we know what's coming and we know the horror of it, but yet we're glued to it and we're so moved by the great sacrifice that he made for us. And in that movie, Jesus, he's being beaten at the whipping post. And there comes this point where he's just literally this lifeless shell laying there, bloodied and beaten, unrecognizable even. And his torturers kind of back off as if to say, it looks like he can't take anymore. Do you remember the moment in the movie, if you saw it? And they're standing off, just kind of observing for a moment, and then all of a sudden, he begins to move that one leg, and what little bit of strength, and even beyond the strength that he even had, he begins to pull himself up slowly. It's as if to say, I'm never gonna quit. For me as a man who faces what I think are big challenges sometimes. For me as a man who thinks sometimes this is more than I can take. This is more than I can handle. Maybe it's pressure. Maybe it's responsibility. Maybe it's pain and loss. As a man, when I see that moment, when I see Jesus making that move that is beyond, it's as if he's saying, it's going to take a whole lot more than this to hold me down. It's as if he's saying, I didn't start out in this thing to quit. Truth is, everyone has a preordained path of life, a path that's meant for us to walk, a path that's been designed by God for each one of us individually. in this room. But many times we find ourselves in these tough places. We find ourselves in these difficult moments of life, these moments where we begin to question everything, these moments where there's way more questions than there are answers, these moments that are so full of pressure and pain and anxiety. But I want to remind every one of us today that our path and our story, yes, just like in Jesus' life, it's going to include some reward, absolutely. There's going to be some joy in this thing called life. There's going to be some life-giving and life-receiving moments in this journey called life. But don't be deceived. This life will also include some pain. There's going to be some uncertainty at times. There's going to be injustice that's going to happen at times. But that's all part of our story. It's all part of the story. And our greatest achievement is not going to be measured by how popular we are or how well-educated we are. Our greatest achievement is going to be walking the path every single day, staying on the path even when life isn't fair. I can't tell you how many times I'm counseling with or ministering with people of faith. These are people who have said, I surrender my heart and life to God. I'm walking a life of faith, who all of a sudden just begin to question everything, just begin to lay down everything. Why am I even serving this God? Why would a good God allow something like this to happen? And we throw it all away. But the greatest accomplishment in our life is in the middle of all of that, when there's more questions than answers, whenever I don't understand life, when it seems like everything is crumbling and falling apart, I rise up and say, but I'm going to walk this thing out. I don't feel it today. I don't even see it with my natural eye today, but I'm going to keep walking it out. There's where the heroes of faith are. I'm going to walk it out. I'm going to stay on the path. Even when it doesn't seem right, even when it doesn't feel right, even when it doesn't seem fair. If you are, you have gone through some great hardships and trials of life, maybe loss or abuse, abandonment, rejection, whatever it may be, I can't explain to you why hardships and problems come our way. We'll never be able to explain that in this life. Anyone that tries to is a fool. We can't explain this, but I do want to encourage you today, no matter what, to stay on the path. Stay on the path. There is a purpose. There is a plan. There is a destiny that is written here. And if we will stay on the path, it will happen. It will be fulfilled. Whatever you do, decide today and then decide again tomorrow. I'm going to walk the path. I'm going to walk the path one step at a time, one day at a time, the path that God has for my life. I love Psalms 119. It's the longest chapter in the whole Bible. And there's several references to the path. In the NIV version, in verse 32, it says, I run in the path of your commands, for you have broadened my understanding. Verse 35, direct me in the path of your commands, for there I find delight. Verse 101, I have kept my feet from every evil path, so that I might obey your word. Verse 104, I gain understanding from your precepts, therefore I hate every wrong path. Verse 105, your word is a lamp for my feet and a light on my path. Verse 128, because I consider all your precepts right, I hate every wrong path. God has a plan, a path planned for each one of us. And we have to walk the path. It wasn't a journey Jesus wanted to make within himself. We hear that in this gut-wrenching prayer in Gethsemane. We hear it, God, if we can get around this, if I don't have to walk this path, is there another way? Nevertheless, your will be done. So I will get up from this place and I will continue to walk the path. I want to remind everybody in this room, I want to encourage everybody in this room today that if we get off the path, I've gotten off the path before. Any other honest folks in the room today that would tell me and be honest and just say, I've gotten off the path before. Well, there's only one thing to do when we get off the path. It's not complicated. There's no diagram to it. There's only one thing to do. Get back on the path. That's all we do. It's simple. It's easy. If we get off the path, we get back on the path. We walk the path that God has for our life. And this path, just like it was with Jesus, This path is made up of decisions. And at the end of our lives, honestly, our greatest regret will not be the things that we wish we had, that we did, that we wish we hadn't done. That won't be our greatest regrets. Our greatest regrets will be the things that we didn't do that we wish we had. That'll be it. In fact, research proves this. When we're young, we regret things. We make mistakes. We do stupid stuff. We mess up. We beat ourselves up, and we're discouraged. It's all about regretting what we did that we wish we hadn't done. But then as time goes on, we grow up a little bit. We get a few gray hairs and less hair. Something begins to happen. The uglier we get, the smarter we get. Something begins to happen. Maybe God knew that when we were young and beautiful and, you know, picturesque and you know, all of that, that too much brains and too much body just wasn't going to work. So he waited for us just to get old and ugly, and then he let us learn some stuff. I'm speaking about me, nobody else in this room. You're all beautiful people, inside and out. We regret things, but as time goes on, these same studies show that everything begins to change. And then the greatest regret becomes the things that we didn't do that we wish we had done. Sometimes we get offended. We get all hung up in that offense. We talk about it. We eat it. We drink it. We sleep it. I mean, to use a good old Southern word, we like to wallow in it. Anybody use that word? Sorry to, you know, put you guys on the spot today. Your name has this negative connotation with it, you know. Is it wallow or waller? In the South, we call it waller. Waller in it. Just bathe in it. The offense. This one did me wrong. Sing the somebody did me wrong song. Cry a tear in my beer with me. We get offended. But someday, there will come a moment in all of our lives. And unfortunately, I've been there at those bedsides when it was the last fleeting moments of someone's life. And it's in those moments that we begin to regret when we didn't make the decision to get over it. It's in those moments that we regret the moment that we didn't choose to just get through it and to put one foot in front of the other and stay on the path that God has for our lives. We need to make the decision right now to not allow anything to move us out of the place where God has put us. We have to keep making the choice, even when it's not an easy choice. I make the choice today, and I make the choice tomorrow. As I mentioned earlier, we love to encapsulate all that Jesus did for us in the one weekend, and as powerful and as foundational as that is for our salvation and our faith in Him, we can't disregard the decision that He made every day of His life. And it's the same for you and me. We like to encapsulate our moment of salvation and everything that God did for us in that time that we walked the aisle and repeated a prayer after the preacher. And it was that one time that happened when I was 11 years old, and then I was baptized, and then that was all it. But no, it was every day and every moment after that day when I woke up in the morning and said, I choose to follow Him today. Come what may, no matter what happens in my life, no matter what opposition I face, no matter how many doubts that arise in my heart and my mind, I choose today. We must follow the example of Jesus when He walked this planet and He didn't let anything stop Him. I'm closing with this. Hebrews chapter 12, verse 1, it says, therefore we also, since we are surrounded by so great a cloud of witnesses, let us lay aside every weight and the sin which so easily ensnares us, and let us run with endurance the race, or can I just say the path that is set before us? Looking unto Jesus, the author and the finisher of our faith, who for the joy, listen to this, who for the joy that was set before Him endured the cross. It's like He saw the big picture. He did see the big picture, despising the shame, and has now sat down at the right hand of the throne of God. We have to look past whatever it is we're facing in the natural right now. We have to be able to see past the emotion and the pain and the hardship of right now. We got to be able to see beyond it. I know it's a dumb, silly analogy, but I think about those big giant crossword puzzles. I mean, not crossword, but jigsaw puzzles. And every now and then, my kitchen table gets kidnapped by one of those things. My wife will put a big old 1,000-piece something out there on our table. We can't even eat supper except around the island. We can't eat supper at our table. And I have a love-hate relationship with it because I can't stand a puzzle. I hate them. I think it's just a colossal waste of time. But yet I can't walk past the table with all those pieces there without picking one up. And around my house, a 1,000-piece puzzle, that may take about 2 or 3 weeks. And that's being generous. And here's what I think about. I think about those puzzles and how that we're looking at these little bitty 1,000th of the picture. 1,000th. 1/1,000th of the picture. And it's just this brown nothing. Or it's just this green nothing. Or it's just this solid red nothing. I know this is part of that red 57 Chevrolet pickup truck that's in the yard, but how it all fits together, I have no idea. And I can get so frustrated. I can get so locked in and zoned in to the one little piece and trying to figure out how it all fits into the big picture that I'll just throw in the towel and give up. And I'm done with this thing. It's not worth that pretty picture that I'm going to look at for 5 minutes and then we're going to crumble it all up, throw it in a box anyway. So I'm done. I'm done. But here's what we do in our lives. We take that one little brown piece that makes no sense to us at all. There's no clarity to this. It's just a mess. There's nothing to understand about this piece. And here's what we do in our lives, figuratively. We throw that piece in the garbage. That don't work. That don't fit. That don't fit into the idea and the plan that I had. We throw it away. The only problem with that is that when we do finally complete that puzzle, 1,000 pieces, and let's just say we framed it and we put it on the wall, and let's just say I hang it in my living room at my house, and you come to my house and you see that on the wall, and it's this beautiful picture, it's this beautiful landscape, trees and mountains and red 57 Chevrolet pickup trucks, whatever. And you walk in, and it's this gorgeous masterpiece that somebody painted one day. Do you know what the one and only thing that you're going to notice when you look at that picture? That 1/1,000th. You're going to disregard this whole beautiful landscape and all of this picture represents. You're going to miss it all over that one little piece. I guess what I'm trying to say today is that when the piece doesn't make sense, just keep walking the path. Don't throw the piece away. Don't curse your crisis. Just keep walking the path. We're heading for a place of honor. We're heading for a place of reward. God has something great in mind for you. So I'll ask us all today in this room, every one of us, is there anything that you need to push through in your life? Is there anything that you need to get over today? Is there any baggage that you're carrying, you've been holding on to for days and weeks, maybe years or decades in your life, that it's time to let go? Is there anything that's holding you back? Is there anything that you need to put behind you? I wonder if there's anybody here today who you found yourself. It was all you could do to get into this building today. And the strength, the emotional and the mental and the spiritual strength, even the physical strength for some people, just to get in this room today. And you've been off the path, but just by you being in this room today, you're saying, I'm not willing to stay off the path of God's plan for my life. Is there anybody here who would say, today's my day? Today's my day. I'm going to stand and I'm going to start moving in the direction of God's plan for my life. I'm not going to worry about fitting in anymore. I'm not going to worry about family opposition anymore. I'm not going to worry about peer pressure anymore, students. I'm making a decision that I'm going to follow and I'm going to step into the path that God has for my life. There's things that every one of us in this room are meant to do. Can I tell you, no one else can do what you're meant to do. There's a path that you're meant to walk. There are decisions that only you can make. Can I just say that if this week, this holy week, this passion week, if this week finds you hungry for a new beginning, if this week finds you longing to restore communion with God, if this week finds you wanting to break away from all of the distractions and to get back to the path that God has for you, if that is you, I just want to encourage you to not allow this moment to pass by, but make the decision. Make the decision once and for all. You're only one decision away from being on the path that God has for you. But Kevin, you don't know where I've been. You don't know what I've done. You have no idea the path that I've been on. Doesn't matter. Doesn't matter. He's not holding your yesterday against you. He's got you here today for a reason. I don't know who this is for. This is not the normal kind of life church sermon. We don't normally have a make or break, draw the line in the sand kind of days. But today is that day. We're entering into what we celebrate as the most powerful, the most passionate, the most holy week of the year. And what a better time than to make that decision once and for all. As for me and my house, we are going to serve the Lord. Come what may. Would you stand with me today across this room? I want to pray. I want to pray. And then after I pray, our worship team is going to begin to lead us into a final song in this service. Won't be much longer and you'll be able to get out of here, but let's not let this moment pass by. Let's not let this moment get away from us. I'm believing that this very week is going to be a life-changing, life-altering moment in some lives and some homes and some marriages. Beginning today with a decision. So you know what I'd like to do today? I didn't even plan on doing this. How many of you grew up in and around church your whole life? Just, you know, maybe not every week, but you know. Okay, so I think everybody's familiar with it. Can we do something today that we don't do, but maybe just very ever so often here at Life Church? Can we just kind of have an old-fashioned altar call? And by this is saying, you know what? I choose Jesus. It's not just because I got stuff going on in my life and I need God to help me. No. I choose the Lord. I want to make Him Lord of my life. I want Him to rule and reign in every part of my life. I want Him ordering my steps. I want to be on the path that He has for me. And I accept that today. And I embrace that today. And I choose to walk in that today. So by doing that, I want us to celebrate today, this moment. I don't know who's in this room today. I don't know who this is for. Maybe you've been going to church your whole life and it's speaking to you for the first time. Maybe you've never been in a church house before and this is your first time and you're hearing about the passion of the Christ in your life and you're saying, I want that. I want to live that. I want to follow that. Here's what we're going to do. We're not going to say every head bowed and every eye closed today. I want every eye open. I want every head up. And I want to open this altar up. And if that's you today, if you want a new beginning in your life, if you want to start over today, maybe you prayed this prayer years ago, but you're saying for the first time, it feels like for the first time today, I'm making that decision. Here's what we're going to do as a church family. If there's anybody that responds to this today and walks to the front of this church, nobody's going to lay hands on you. Nobody's going to make you repeat anything. That's in your heart. That's between you and God, and you're giving your life to Him. There's no ritual or protocol here. It's just you taking a step and saying, this is me. This is my new day. This is my new beginning. I'm making a choice to walk the path that He has for my life. I'm going to invite you to come, and when you come today, the reason why I want every head up and every eye open is I want the church family, your family of believers, your brothers and your sisters in the Lord to begin to celebrate today. I want us to begin to applaud and worship and thank God for you making the decision. We celebrate this moment with you today. I didn't even plan on doing this today. This was not even on my radar today, but I know it's time. It's a place and a time for this. Whoever you are, wherever you are today, we want to celebrate with you today that moment of new beginning. We're going to sing. We're going to open this altar up. Nobody's going to embarrass you. Nobody's going to call you out. Nobody's going to do anything. Unless you want prayer, we'll pray with you. But other than that, this is between you and the Lord. But it's you taking that step for a new beginning. Father, I thank you for this day. I thank you for this moment, God, that you've blessed us with. Help us, God, not to lose the moment where you're calling us, where you're beckoning us to that higher place, to that greater place, and for that path, God, that you have set for our lives. Today, God, I pray that you move on every heart and life in this room. And today, God, give us fertile soil, God, to absorb and receive what you're doing in our lives. And we embrace that today, God, and we acknowledge it, and we obey it, and we follow you. In Jesus' name, have your way. In the name of the Lord, amen. These altars are open. God bless you. Let's worship together today.